Very happy Easter to all of you. We've been celebrating all week. Every day this week has been a solemnity, and we sing the Gloria and light our Easter candles, still celebrating our Easter joy. I remember in 1999, I was very fortunate, blessed, to be able to travel to Poland. And we took a train, an overnight train from Austria. I still remember it was a very weird experience because in the middle of the night, these German shepherds invaded our sleeping car and guys with machine guns came in and you're like, what did I do? And all they were doing were, we were crossing the border into Poland and they come and inspect the whole car and you're startled because you're just not used to that kind of thing here in the United States. And we traveled, our first day there, we stayed in Krakow, and we traveled out to Auschwitz the first day. And we walked around the ground of Auschwitz. We saw the cell where St. Maximilian Kolbe was starved to death. We walked through the gas chambers of Auschwitz where so many people died. And then that afternoon, we drove back to Krakow and went to something called the Divine Mercy Chapel. In this chapel is where a young nun named Maria Faustina Kowalska received a vision of Jesus, this image that you see displayed in our sanctuary today. And he revealed himself to her as Divine Mercy. These rays coming forth from his heart, rays of mercy falling upon the world. And this image came early in the last century before these world wars and all the atrocities that would follow. And I think it was very timely. It was very stark reminders. We're kneeling there in this chapel before this image, having just experienced all the horrors of Auschwitz in our own way, and thinking, does the mercy of God fall on even that? Does the mercy of God extend to the soldiers who did so many horrible things? The doctors that experimented on the Jewish people and on others? The ones who killed Maximilian Kolbe? Does his mercy fall on them too? And the answer, of course, is yes. It is available to anyone who will come to him. In this image, Jesus revealed to Sister Faustina that those rays fall on the world, but some choose to bask in those rays, to be covered with those rays, penetrated with the rays of mercy, but some do not. In fact, she asked Jesus, you know, why are there two different rays? And he said, well, some fall on those that, you know, want God's mercy and are willing to receive it. And some just fall on no one because there are people who will not come to Jesus for his mercy. I think it's easy for us sometimes as human beings to judge, isn't it? And there is a sense in which we should judge. We should judge between right and wrong. We judge every day. We judge the distance of the car in front of us. We judge how long it'll take us to stop before the stoplight. We judge how long it'll take us to get to the store and get back home and whether we can do it in time. Judgment is a good thing. It helps us live life. But where do we draw the line? It is appropriate for the Christian to even judge someone's actions, to look at something, some action, understand the reason behind it, and to think that probably is not going to help me or that person get to heaven. That's a good judgment. It's another thing to go up to that person and to say, you're going to hell. That is not what we are called to do. Jesus has asked us to help bring people to his mercy. And one of the prerequisites for mercy that's very hard in our time because people have seemed to have swept it under the rug is honesty. This past week, our principal was, well, she said she was going to a conference. I think it was a vacation, an expensive vacation. She said it was a very good conference, by the way. But because she was gone, the teachers did an excellent job of handling discipline problems, but I had had some difficulties with some students, and I told them the next time they got in trouble, they had to come and see me. And so, well, guess what happened this past week? And they came to see me, and I sat them down, each in my office separately. Now, their teachers already emailed me and told me the whole story. I know everything that she knows. But I bring them into my office, and the first question I always ask a student is, what did you do? Now, you might think that's kind of evil of Father Matt, tricky even. But it's not for some type of sadistic joy. But rather, I'm testing their honesty. Because, you know, it's easier to help somebody who's honest about their failure than somebody who continues to lie about it, right? I mean, if you're a businessman and you have an employee who made a mistake and you want to help him get better, you bring him in, you sit him down, and you ask him what happened. If he lies to you the whole time, you can't help him get better. But if he's honest with you, you can say, okay, well, this is what you need to do next time. And brothers and sisters, it's true with our school children, it's true in our work, it's true in our lives, but it is also true in our relationship with God. If we go before him and we try to hide things, try to sweep them under the rug, that's not mercy. It's not effective because it doesn't change us. And we live in a society that says mercy is essentially the same as permissiveness. I had a family come to me once. They had a senior in high school, and they wanted to get him confirmed. Now, here in Christ the King, we confirm in freshman or sophomore year. A heads up to all of our parents who will have freshmen and sophomores next year. They'd missed their chance once before, and then we made a point that previous summer to make five announcements, 5 weekends in a row, put it in the bulletin every weekend, and we personally called every family in the parish that would have somebody for confirmation. And so they come to me halfway through the confirmation classes, and they say, Father, our son needs to get confirmed. I said, well, you know, we've been announcing it, and we've been calling you, and we've been offering classes to you, and you don't come to church. So is it really the best thing to have him confirmed in a faith that he's not practicing? And the father got very mad at me. He even tried to quote Pope Francis. He said, well, Pope Francis says we should be merciful. And, of course, I didn't say this. I'm trying to be very sensitive and helpful. But, like, well, that's why I'm meeting with you today, is because of mercy. But I can't just take away the need to prepare and the need to practice your faith. I can't just sweep it under the rug. And he was upset with me because I wouldn't do that and just let his son go ahead and be confirmed without preparation and without regular attendance at church. You see, that's not mercy. And we live in a world that's distorted that word so poorly. Mercy requires honesty. Mercy requires us to go before the Lord and to fully admit who we are and our failures and our weaknesses. Some of us battle so much, I think, with judging ourselves or judging others or holding on to past resentments, and we we hold on to that. And in a sense, we take some element of our life, whether it's a past hurt or that resentment or that judgment, and we have it boxed up, and we never let those rays of mercy fall on that. And we all have them. Every one of us in this church today have some area of our life that we have not allowed the mercy of God to touch. And so I want to encourage you today as you come to this Eucharist to imagine those rays of mercy, those rays of light coming forth from the heart of Jesus and falling upon you. And not just you, but everyone sitting around you. All your co-workers, all your friends and family, all the leaders of the world, all the most evil people in the world, all the people you like the least, those rays of mercy falling on all of us. And then to allow the Lord into that area of your life, that part that you boxed up, so that you will hold nothing back from him.